Epithalamion, a nine-world story, written by Olivia Searcy and read by Calicaria. This story has been rated explicit, contains the pairing Artorin Damara Cleofer Kip Madang, and has been tagged accidental marriage, first time, romance, spoilers for Artorin Damara's secret name, spoilers, weddings, written before at the feet of the sun, woke up married, be the tropes you want to see in the world. Notes. This story goes AU after chapter 79 of The Hands of the Emperor, and is therefore not fully canon compliant with anything after that, but it does contain spoilers for The Return of Fitzroy Angersall, and basically everything else. Not The Redoubtable Pally of Ramapol, though, because I haven't read it yet. One line of dialogue is lifted, more or less, from The Hands of the Emperor epilogue. Cleofer was nursing his third cup of coffee, and his hangover, when Havor came into the sitting room. "Zemius Dominus Madang is here and has requested to speak with you, Your Excellency," Havor said, with more formality than Cleofer felt the situation, or the morning, really warranted. At the writing desk in the corner, Gaudi looked up in surprise. "Cousin Zemius?" Unlike Cleofer, Gaudi was fresh-faced and bright-eyed. He didn't look at all like someone who had been at the party until dawn and then gone down into the city for breakfast with Tali and Zaul. Cleofer sipped his coffee and tried not to feel too unbearably envious of his nephew's youth. He felt like he'd been stomped on by an elephant. "I'll see him, Havor," he said, and then to Gaudi. "Did Zemius leave early? I was really expecting everyone to still be asleep." It was afternoon, but only barely. Cleofer, still fizzing a little from the magic, the release of tension, the overflowing emotions of the last few days and months and years, had slept poorly. When he'd finally dragged himself out of bed, he'd found Gaudi already at work on the mountain of correspondence that had accumulated since their arrival in the Vangaveeva, utterly impervious to Cleofer's mild suggestion that it was supposed to be a day of rest. "He was definitely there for Aurora," Gaudi said, eyes twinkling. Cleofer stared down into his coffee in a probably pointless effort to stop whatever his face was doing. He was not nearly awake enough to sort through how he felt about playing Aurora with his radiancy. "I'm not sure about after that, though," Gaudi added, more sheepishly. "There was the dancing and, Cousin Enya's cocktails." Cleofer laughed, getting to his feet as Zemius came in. "Zem, sit down," he said at once, clasping his cousin's arms in greeting. Zemius was in yesterday's party clothes, with his rumpled scholar's robe thrown on over them. He clearly hadn't been to bed. "Is everything all right?"
"Cousin Kip," Zemius began urgently, "I have to tell you—"
He stopped when Franzel emerged from the back of the apartment with a tray of fresh coffee and steamed buns. "Sit down and have some coffee first," Cleofer advised. He had found, in all his years as His Radiancy's private secretary, that there were very few emergencies that could not wait for at least a moment. "Thank you, Franzel," he said, and then to Zemius. "Is it life or death?" Zemius looked conflicted, but he sat down on the edge of the sofa and took the coffee Franzel poured for him.
"Possibly?"
"Oh, dear," said Cleofer, resigned. "You'd better tell me, then." Zemius glanced anxiously at Franzel, who bowed and went out again, leaving Cleofer and Zemius alone with Gaudi and the guards at the door.
"Right," Zemius said. "So, Kip, do you remember when Dora asked His Serene and Radiant Holiness the Last Emperor if the Regency ceremony was a wedding?"
Cleofer set his coffee down before he could spill it all over himself.
"Yes," he said warily.
His Radiancy explained it to her. It was a fair question, I suppose, when she'd never seen a ceremony like that before. Not that there had ever been anything like it for Dora, or anyone else, for that matter, to have seen.
"Yes," Zemius nodded. But what Dora said, it reminded me of something. And, well, Kip, I don't think you're going to want to hear this, but the thing is, it was a wedding. Gaudi dropped his pen, and in the echoing silence that followed Zemius's words, the metal hitting the floor resounded like the palace bells. What? Cleophor's ears were ringing. Zemius put his coffee cup back down on the table and took a deep breath. I went back to my office at the university after I left the party, because when I get an idea in my head, well, you know. He laughed, but it didn't sound like he found it particularly funny. Aunt Mula always says I can never stop once I've started researching something, and she should know a monomania when she sees one, shouldn't she? But I remembered my colleague Ilana. Domina Kindra, Kip, do you remember her? She must be at least 90 and retired, but she was the greatest expert in Vangavayavan history in the whole of the Empire. Zem, Cleophor said sharply. Gaudi had turned fully away from the desk and was staring at Zemius with wide eyes. Zemius swallowed audibly and twisted his hands together in his lap. Right, sorry. I didn't remember it exactly right, but then Yolana never published much about this. Most of her work was about the aftermath of Aurelius Magnus and the Vangaveave, the first Estendalan governors. You must have read After the Moon, Kip. But she had a passion project for years about the Paramount Chiefs, how they were chosen and what they had the power to do. Of course, she's Kindra and descended from Elanoa's sister, I think. Cleophor had read Domina Yolana Kindra's After the Moon, the Islands, and the Empire, as well as several of her other books and articles, but he wasn't sure where Zemius was going with this. It took me a while, Zemius continued, but I found an article she'd sent me. Just a draft, mind you, but her research was sound. And one of the things the Paramount Chiefs had the power to do was marry people. Back in those days, the Wayfinders... Well... Our people cared about seeing the thing done right, but there wasn't time to sit around planning a wedding. Zemius's voice had steadied, on firmer ground now that he was delivering a history lecture. We were in a hurry, always moving from island to island. So if two people clasped hands around an Okana shell and vowed their commitment to one another before the Paramount Chief, it was a binding marriage. There hadn't been a Paramount Chief since Elanoa, Cleophor said slowly, but it was already too late. He could see the whole picture now, as clear as glass. Until yesterday. But, Gaudi said, and then clapped a hand over his mouth. Go ahead, Gaudi. To his own ears, Cleophor's voice sounded surprisingly level. He felt almost separate from his body, floating somewhere above what was happening around him. Maybe it was the hangover. Sorry, Uncle Kip. Gaudi glanced between Cleophor and Zemius. It's just, that can't still be legally binding, can it? It's been thousands of years. Cleophor picked up his coffee cup. His hands were trembling, but it definitely wasn't the magic this time. It wouldn't be, he said, remembering all the letters he'd exchanged with Toucan, if this was a different part of the Empire. But we, the Vangaveave, we entered the Empire willingly, and Aurelius Magnus codified the local laws. Vangaveavan legal systems have always been recognized as fully valid by the Estendalan Empire. He smiled at Gaudi, because it was much easier to think about this abstractly, as a problem of history and law and politics, instead of his entire life. That's actually made it somewhat easier to introduce principles from the Lays into the new government, Gaudi. He looked at Zemius. And of course, most of our laws are old, with roots in the Lays or earlier. We've adapted them, created new ones, but the oldest ones are still in place. Isn't that right? Zemius nodded. He was looking miserable again, and had picked up a steamed bun only to tear it into shreds of dough. Coming to tell me was the right thing to do, Cleophor said gently. He was seized, suddenly, with an entirely inappropriate urge to start laughing. He only managed to control his face from long practice with the Council of Princes. Go home and get some rest, Zem, he said instead, and beckoned Koloi over from the door. "Koloi, please ensure that Dominus Madang gets home safely."
"Yes, Your Excellency,"
Koloi said, even as Zemius protested.
"Oh no, Kip, really, I couldn't.
For my peace of mind," Cleofer said, recognizing even as he said it how much he sounded like His Radiancy.
"You really look like you might fall into a canal."
He stood, only a little unsteady on his own feet. "His Radiancy may wish to speak with you later, and I'm sure you'd rather be rested." That might have been an unnecessarily low blow, since Zemius turned pale and nodded anxiously.
"You'll be... you're not going to..."
Cleofer patted him on the shoulder. "I'll be fine." He was almost sure it was true. "I'm the Viceroy of Zenid. Nobody is going to put me to death for accidental—" He choked a little before managing to get out. "Marrying the Emperor." Behind him, Gaudi dissolved into a coughing fit. Cleofer sighed. It was going to be a long day. Xerophon and Vara were on duty outside His Radiancy's rooms. Even after months of traveling from province to province, it was still a little strange to have His Radiancy directly next door. Under the circumstances, however, Cleofer was grateful not to have to go tromping through the palace. Vara opened the door to him immediately.
"Good afternoon, Your Excellency," Xerophon said, smiling. "And may I say, congratulations."
Cleofer had a moment of utter dissociation in which he thought he was being congratulated on his marriage before he remembered his viceroyship.
"Thank you," he said, a beat too late, and went hurriedly into His Radiancy's rooms.
The sitting room was deserted, but he could hear voices coming from the back of the apartment, the sound of splashing water and someone singing. "His Radiancy," from the richness of the voice. Cleofer closed his eyes and listened. He recognized the melody. Not one of Fitzroy Ingersoll's, this time, but an old Zuni traveling song. The sitting room was bright with sunshine, pouring in through the sheer fluttering curtains. The wide windows and balcony doors opened to let in the fresh air. Their rooms were at the top of the palace, and it would take a very determined and very lucky assassin to climb the sheer rock walls and the cliff that led down to the sea, but even so. But there were guards on the door, and this was the Vangaveeva, and His Radiancy was leaving on a quest where he would surely encounter far greater dangers than open windows. Cleofer took a slow, steadying breath and went into the bedroom. Ludwig and Rodin were on duty, flanking the half-open bathroom door, and Lady Alette and Kanji were laying out clothing on the bed.
"Good morning, Cleofer," Kanji said, smiling at Cleofer over a length of gold silk. "We were just wondering if you were awake."
"If I recall correctly," Cleofer said dryly, "you were all at the party as late as I was. Ludwig, Rodin, I thought you had the morning off."
"We switched shifts," Ludwig said, sounding embarrassed. "I'm too old to sleep in. It's terrible."
"What's Rodin's excuse?" Cleofer demanded, grinning in spite of himself. "I was hungry," Rodin said demurely. "And then once I was awake..."
Cleofer laughed, and Lady Alette said, "You will all have to practice for your retirement, I think. None of you know how to relax."
Then she looked Cleofer up and down, assessingly.
"You do look very well today, Your Excellency, if a trifle sleep-deprived."
Cleofer had put on one of his nicest informal outfits before leaving his rooms. There was really no point in pretending any longer, not after every single person he knew had commented on his wardrobe, and certainly not after the Regency ceremonies. And anyway, it was one of his favorites. His Radiancy had complimented it more than once.
"Thank you, Lady Alette," he said, blushing.
The singing in the bathroom stopped suddenly, and His Radiancy called out,
"Is that Cleofer? Come in, Kip. I'm nearly done."
Cleofer looked at Konju, who shrugged and handed him a pile of soft white cloth, His Radiancy's robe. Cleofer stared down at the fabric in his hands, and then he sighed and went past Rodin and Ludwig into the bathroom. His Radiancy was in the bath. It was a much smaller bath than the one in the Imperial apartments, and the room was warm with steam. In the bath, submerged up to his neck in clear water,
His radiancy looked utterly relaxed, and he smiled like Cleofer was the person he most wanted to see in the world. Cleofer genuflected automatically, and then stood and met his radiancy's eyes.
"And how is my Lord Viceroy today?"
his radiancy asked. His gaze passed over Cleofer, warmly assessing, and his smile widened in approval. Cleofer blushed again, and mentally blamed the steam. "Moderately hungover," he said ruefully. His radiancy laughed, and Cleofer grinned back at him until he remembered his purpose and stopped smiling. "But I need to speak with you, my lord. In private." His radiancy arched an eyebrow, but all he said was,
"Of course."
Cleofer exhaled in relief, and then his radiancy stood up out of the bath and his breath caught in his throat. He was naked, his dark skin damp and flushed from the bath, and although Cleofer knew that his lord was comfortable and casual with his own nudity, as one had to be when one was never alone, Cleofer was not. He couldn't quite bring himself to look politely away. The problem was that he did not want to. After a long moment, his radiancy said,
"May I have my robe?"
"Oh," Cleofer said helplessly. His face felt like it was on fire. "Yes, my lord, of course. I'm so sorry. I..." He closed his mouth, because there was no good place that sentence could go, and silently held out the robe. His radiancy took it, and then, deliberately, because even now there was no chance that he would touch someone accidentally, he brushed his fingers over the back of Cleofer's hand. Cleofer made a soft and voluntary noise at the touch, and his radiancy withdrew his hand and put on his robe. His expression was as inscrutable as ever, but his eyes were warm with pleasure.
"Let's go out onto the balcony," his radiancy said lightly. "It's a beautiful day."
"Yes, my lord," Cleofer said. He hoped desperately, as he followed his radiancy back into the bedroom, that Conju and Ludwig and Rodin and Lydialette would be kind enough not to mention his seemingly permanent flush. The balcony stretched along one full side of the apartment, with a gorgeous glittering view down to the sea. Ludwig and Rodin followed them into the sitting room, but let Cleofer and his radiancy go out onto the balcony alone. Rodin even winked at Cleofer as they went by, which was terrible. His radiancy left the doors open behind them and led Cleofer along the stone parapet until they were no longer visible from inside, before making the gesture for the wall of silence. Cleofer knew they were no longer visible, because this was where they had come the night before, after Aurora, when the party had spilled out from Cleofer's rooms into the palace halls, loud and vibrant and unrestrained. He had felt giddy, overwhelmed, from the high of the music and the magic and his family's approval, not to mention Enya's extraordinarily potent rum cocktails, and he'd needed a moment. His radiancy must have noticed, because somehow Cleofer had found himself whisked through his radiancy's rooms and out onto the cool night air of the balcony, just the two of them with Atto and Pekabe guarding the door. It was quiet on the balcony, the noise of the party muted behind them, and Cleofer had leant on the railing and looked out over the lights of Gorgio City. Home. Beside him, the man who was his other home had said,
"Are you happy, Kip?"
Cleofer had turned to look at him and gotten caught in his golden eyes. "Yes," he said simply. Happiness was bubbling over inside him, and there was only one more thing he wanted. He held out his hand. "My lord, can I..."
"Yes,"
his radiancy breathed, and Cleofer took his hand. It was different from the ceremony, but no less of a shock. There was still a little magic humming between them, but his radiancy's hand felt entirely human, warm and solid and real. Ordinary. His skin was soft from all of Kanju's expensive imperial lotions, but when their fingers intertwined, Cleofer could feel harp calluses. His radiancy shivered, looking down at their clasped hands.
"Are you cold?"
Cleofer asked, even though it was a warm night.
"No."
He looked up and met Cleofer's eyes,
deliberate and open, and Cleofer was almost bowled over by everything he read there. Maybe it was because he was drunk, or because he was happy, or because there no longer seemed any reason not to be reckless, but he had reached out with his free hand and touched His Radiancy's cheek. "It's safe now, my lord," he said gently. "I promise." His Radiancy sighed, leaning almost imperceptibly into Cleofer's touch.
"Kip, I..."
He cut himself off, and then he turned his head and pressed his lips to Cleofer's palm. Cleofer made a noise he hadn't previously known he was capable of making, and then somehow he was stepping in close and they were kissing. It was tentative, uncertain, but it was enough. Cleofer had to let go of His Radiancy's hand to put his arms around him and pull him closer. He wanted to touch as much of him as he could. His Radiancy drew back to rest their foreheads together, his hands on Cleofer's shoulders.
"Safe as relative,"
he said breathlessly. There was a laugh in his voice. Cleofer wanted to taste it, so he nudged their mouths together again. He felt like he might explode, and the feeling didn't go away when His Radiancy kissed him back, still soft and slow, but more exploratory, more sure. "My... Tor," he gasped between kisses. "Is this... Should we..." He had no idea what he was trying to say. "Should we stop, maybe?" But that seemed like the worst idea he had ever had.
"Probably,"
His Radiancy said, in a low voice that Cleofer had never heard from him before but was suddenly and intensely arousing.
"But..."
He kissed Cleofer again instead of finishing the sentence. There was a loud clattering from inside, and then a chorus of laughter, and then Cleofer could hear his sister say, loud and carrying, "Well, where did he go then? It's his party!" They broke apart. Cleofer took a shaky step back, catching his breath, and His Radiancy let go of him and rubbed a hand over his face. When he looked back at Cleofer, he was smiling, rueful and warm, and so familiar that Cleofer ached.
"We should go back inside."
"Yes," Cleofer sighed. "Vinye probably would come out here, guards or no guards, and..."
"It is your party,"
His Radiancy finished.
"My Lord Viceroy."
Cleofer went hot all over, and couldn't stop himself from giving His Radiancy an outraged look. His Radiancy laughed, but before he turned to lead them back inside, he'd caught Cleofer's hand once more and raised it to his lips. They hadn't been alone again after that. Not until now, back on the balcony in the sunshine. They had been married, then. Cleofer felt an overwhelming sensation of vertigo. He leant heavily against the wall of the balcony and stared out at the sea. It was a beautiful day. Possibly. Everything about it was beautiful.
"What's wrong?"
His Radiancy said quietly. He was standing close to Cleofer, but not touching him, and Cleofer abruptly threw caution and 10,000 taboos to the winds and grabbed for his hand. His Radiancy breathed out on a sigh and folded their fingers together. His palm was a little damp, which bizarrely made Cleofer relax as much as the touch. "It turns out," Cleofer said, "that my little cousin Dora was right, after all. It was a wedding." His Radiancy went very still, and then he began to laugh.
"Oh, no," he said after a moment. "No, really?"
When Cleofer let himself look, His Radiancy was grinning. He was also glowing a little in the sun, which might or might not have been magic. Cleofer wanted to kiss him, but instead he quickly outlined Zemius's discovery and Domina Kindra's research. "Zemius was very distraught," he finished. "I think he thought I might be put to death for daring to marry you."
"Well, so you might be,"
said His Radiancy judiciously.
"If we hadn't just spent more than a year ensuring your magical and legal right to my person."
Cleofer twitched. "That's really not... The viceroyship means I can act on your behalf," he said firmly, ignoring the way his body was reacting. "I couldn't presume. An accident in legal history does not make a marriage, my lord.
Doesn't it?
His Radiancy took Cleofer by the shoulders and turned him so they were face to face. Cleofer looked up into his blazing eyes and swallowed hard.
To act on my behalf?
His Radiancy repeated softly.
To share the stewardship of Zenith prior to our mutual retirement. A role, one might say, more traditionally reserved for spouses.
My lord, Cleofer protested.
My dear Kip, said His Radiancy, what in all the nine worlds makes you think I wouldn't want to marry you?
Cleofer started, but the rest of the sentence was swallowed up by His Radiancy's mouth. Cleofer kissed him back, intense and frantic, and five times the speed of the night before, not hesitant at all. He moaned when His Radiancy slung his tongue into his mouth, and then somehow Cleofer had his hands inside the open front of His Radiancy's robe and was pressing him back against the wall to kiss him deeper. I only meant, he said breathlessly, after several minutes, that it seemed a little fast, and you have the quest, and we didn't know. Something occurred to him suddenly, and he stepped back, narrowing his eyes. Did you know? His Radiancy blinked, and then snorted.
I've made something of a study of obscure legal practices, but no, I had no idea.
He traced his thumb over Cleofer's mouth, smiling.
That doesn't mean I'm sorry, though. I'd hoped, well, I thought perhaps, once I'd completed my quest, it might be fair to ask. But I think I'm glad I don't have to find out if my bravery can extend that far.
Cleofer had to kiss him again for that, but the next time they stopped to catch their breath, he said, half muffled into His Radiancy's shoulder, I may have bought a house in Gorgio City.
Oh, yes,
His Radiancy murmured, stroking his hands up and down Cleofer's back, until Cleofer shivered against him.
Rodin told me, and Gonjo, and your sister, and Birdie, and at least three of your aunts. In fact, I think everyone told me. Some of them twice.
Cleofer groaned, and His Radiancy laughed and threaded his hands into Cleofer's hair, drawing him back up to kiss.
There's room for me in this house.
It was a more tentative question than Cleofer had expected. Of course there is, he said firmly. There's a magical puzzle for you to solve, a space for your fabric collection, room for a library, a workroom. He traced his fingertips over His Radiancy's bare collarbone. The robe had slipped almost entirely off his shoulders. Rodin warned me against getting too close to treason, but...
I rather think that ship has sailed,
His Radiancy said dryly, and then gasped when Cleofer kissed the hollow of his throat.
Don't you?
Cleofer lifted his head in time to catch the amusement in His Radiancy's eyes. I think you'll like the house, he said, suddenly feeling very shy about it, which was absurd.
I know I will, His Radiancy said. You've never steered me wrong.
My lord, Cleofer said, face heating. He started to take a step back, but His Radiancy caught his hands and brought them to his mouth. Tor.
I think,
said His Radiancy, in a tone that made Cleofer's skin prickle with something that was definitely both alarm and arousal.
But if we're married, you should call me by my name.
Cleofer blinked at him. Artoran? It sounded wrong, and not only because it was still a taboo to say it to his face. His Radiancy shook his head.
The real one.
Oh, Cleofer said, oddly breathless. Really?
Yes.
He let go of Cleofer's hands. Cleofer stepped away, giving him space, and His Radiancy went to the balcony railing, gazed out at the sea for a moment before he turned back to Cleofer. He stood tall and straight, bare-shouldered, with the robe caught gracefully around his elbows, like that was how it was meant to be worn. He didn't look touchable in the slightest, but Cleofer could still feel his skin under his hands, his mouth. He could still remember,
bright as flame, how had felt to see both the Emperor and the inner man, to know that they are part of an indivisible whole.
"My name is Fitzroy,"
said His Radiancy, apologetically. Cleofer opened his mouth, and then closed it, and then all his breath left him in a rush of helpless laughter. He laughed so hard that he slid down the wall to sit on the balcony floor. He heard the rustle of fabric before he felt His Radiancy. Fitzroy! Fitzroy! As if he could possibly have been anyone else! Sit down beside him.
"I'm not sure what I was expecting," Fitzroy said mildly, "but I don't think it was that. Kip, my dear, are you all right?"
"Yes," Cleofer gasped. His face hurt from laughing. "I really should have known." He turned his head to smile helplessly at the greatest folk hero of the age, who was also, apparently, the love of his life. I mean, last night, who plays Aurora like that? Honestly, the harp. We all should have known. Fitzroy had the grace to look a little embarrassed.
"I think it mostly just doesn't occur to people. I'm not real to most people, either of me."
"You're real to me," Cleofer said, and watched him light up like a bonfire. He leaned in, taking Fitzroy's face in his hands, and kissed him. It was slow and sweet and heated, and Cleofer wanted, very badly, and in a way he hadn't wanted anyone in years, to get him somewhere with a bed and a door that locked. He laughed into Fitzroy's mouth again, instead. "It's just," he said, when Fitzroy drew back far enough to raise inquiring eyebrows. "My family..."
"Oh," said Fitzroy, laughing with him. "Are they going to be very upset?"
His eyes were sparkling. "I'll never hear the end of it," Cleofer said in despair, but he couldn't stop smiling. As if it wasn't enough to turn everything they thought they knew about me on its head in the space of 48 hours, I had to go and marry a Velio, and not just any Velio, but the last Emperor of Astandalas. If they find out the rest, we're done for.
Fitzroy said. "To be honest, I'd prefer to keep that part quiet for a while yet, regardless. There are very good reasons for Fitzroy Angersell to disappear, and his reappearance may be somewhat complex."
Cleofer took his hand and rubbed his thumb over his knuckles. "Of course," he agreed, because the return of Fitzroy Angersell would cause ripples no matter how it happened, and Cleofer would like to have some time to straighten out the government first. "In any case," he added, a little sheepishly, "I don't think my mother is going to be all that surprised. About you and me, I mean." He flushed at Fitzroy's expression and explained. "When they came to Solara, she asked if I was in love with you."
"And were you?"
"Yes," Cleofer said honestly. "I didn't think I could be, then. Even letting myself think about it was treason, and impossible besides, so I just didn't think about it. But, yes, I was. Of course I was. I am." Fitzroy kissed him. Cleofer sank into it, losing himself in the warmth of Fitzroy's mouth until someone rapped loudly on the open balcony door. Fitzroy sighed as they parted, but he made the gesture to dispel the wall of silence and said, not quite in his court voice, but loud enough to carry,
"Yes, all right."
He didn't get up off the ground or straighten his robe or let go of Cleofer's hand, though, so Cleofer stayed where he was. Ludwig poked his head around the door, and then, eyebrows shooting up to his hairline, he came the rest of the way out onto the balcony.
"Ludwig, good,"
said Fitzroy, sliding seamlessly back into His Radiancy.
"You can be the first to congratulate us."
Ludwig looked down at them, sitting on the floor of the balcony with their hands clasped, and it was only because Cleofer knew him as well as he did that he could recognize the emotions on his impassive face. Shock and amusement and horror and delight. Cleofer had a bad feeling that he looked as disheveled as he felt. It was probably extremely obvious what they had been doing.
"Congratulations, my lords,"
Ludwig said, impressively straight-faced.
"Thank you, Ludwig,"
said Fitzroy,
His Radiancy, standing and drawing Cleofer to his feet beside him.
As it happens, Cleofer and I were married yesterday.
Ludwig blinked, and then turned a mildly accusing look on Cleofer. It wasn't my fault, Cleofer said.
It wasn't anyone's fault, said His Radiancy. It is, in fact, a delightful and fortuitous occasion, however unexpected.
Unexpected is one word for it, Ludwig said, not quite under his breath. His Radiancy raised an eyebrow and said, in the deceptively mild tone that put fear into the hearts of the Council of Princes,
And what word would you use, Commander Alma?
Ludwig bowed. If you will forgive me, my lord, no one who knows you well could mistake your intentions. He looked between the two of them, a hint of a smile curving around his lips. It was simply a matter of time. His smile widened. Although Roden has been known to despair of either of you ever recognizing what was right in front of you. I paraphrase, of course. His Radiancy covered his face with the hand that was not holding Cleofer's, and said, faintly stifled,
Thank you, Ludwig. That is very enlightening.
How did Roden know? Cleofer said plaintively. I didn't even know.
Roden appeared behind Ludwig, stepping out onto the balcony. I heard my name, he started, and then stopped, his eyes going wide and his mouth forming a perfect O. Hello, Roden, Cleofer said, sighing. I seem to have crossed that line somewhat irrevocably.
They got married, Ludwig said,
with an amount of glee Cleofer had rarely heard from him. Roden let out a low whistle.
How did that happen?
He asked, and then, without waiting for an answer,
Kanju is going to have a fit.
He thought he had at least a year to plan a wedding. His Radiancy cleared his throat, and everyone went quiet.
As illuminating as this conversation has been, he said dryly, how it happened is not important.
He glanced sideways at Cleofer, his eyes alight with mischief, and then turned back to Ludwig and Roden.
What is important, Ludwig, Roden, much as I appreciate your consideration, what is important right now is for you to clear my bedchamber and then guard it from the outside.
Cleofer went hot all over, flushing to the roots of his hair. Roden made a stifled noise, and Ludwig frowned and opened his mouth, and then closed again when His Radiancy stared him down. If you're certain, my lord, Ludwig said, after a moment. He glared at Roden, who was failing to muffle his laughter. We will see it done.
Thank you, His Radiancy said. We are.
He squeezed Cleofer's hand, and Cleofer realized with a rush of warmth that it wasn't the Imperial plural, it was just the plural. We, the two of them, together. Ludwig and Roden bowed, to both of them, although Roden was still laughing, and went back inside. Our friends might be worse than my family, Cleofer said, once they were gone. His Radiancy made a humming sound.
Will it shock you to hear that I rather enjoy it?
Cleofer laughed. Not at all, he said, turning to look at him. It means you're real to them, too.
Yes.
His Radiancy reached out and touched Cleofer's flushed cheek, much as Cleofer had dared to touch him the night before.
Are you ready to go in?
Every part of Cleofer's body felt alive, alight. Yes, my lord, he said. In the bedroom, with the door closed firmly behind them, and a trail of stunned guards and retainers left equally firmly outside, Fitzroy put up the wall of silence again and slumped back against the door with a sigh. Cleofer sank down on the edge of the bed, which was at least a normal height. It was still very impressive, with carved posts and golden draperies and the crisp white imperial linens Kanju had brought from Solara, but it was an ordinary bed, nothing like the immense and intimidating one in His Radiancy's bedchamber in the palace. Cleofer was thinking about the bed because he absolutely did not want to think about how every single person outside the bedroom knew exactly what they had come in here to do.
Well,
said Fitzroy, and then he didn't say anything else. It seemed so unlike him, both the Emperor and the poet, that Cleofer looked up in surprise and then choked on a laugh at the blank look on Fitzroy's face. It was much easier to recognize the humor of the situation now that they were alone again, and after a moment Fitzroy started to smile back at him, his eyes lightening with amusement. "Do you ever become accustomed to the constant scrutiny?" Cleofer asked. Fitzroy made a face.
"Yes and no. At times I could go for years without noticing. Before you invited me to the Vanga Veve, I'd almost closed myself off so far that none of it mattered."
Cleofer made a noise of distress, and Fitzroy said gently,
"It's all right. That's not important now. Now I do notice, most often when I wish I could be alone with you without alerting a dozen people, all of whom have opinions."
"Do you often wish to be alone with me?" Cleofer felt clumsy, trying to flirt. Not to mention that he was trying to flirt with the sun on Earth, who was also Fitzroy Angersell, who was also his husband. But the grin he got in return made it worth it.
"Constantly."
Fitzroy straightened and stepped away from the door. He'd rearranged his robe to come inside, but it was still loose around his shoulders, slipping down his arms. "You know," Cleofer said earnestly, trying to keep a straight face, "Bertie once told me that he and Cora was his first wife. He said they were so tired after all the excitement that they just went straight to sleep on their wedding night." Fitzroy's eyes narrowed.
"Cleofer, madame," he said dangerously, "I have waited for you for..."
"How long?" Cleofer asked, his heart in his throat.
"Centuries,"
said Fitzroy, and dropped the robe. This time, Cleofer didn't even pretend to look away. He had always thought his radiancy was beautiful, tall and slender and dark, fine-featured and well-made and as flawless and untouchable as a painting, even as Cleofer had come to know him better. But he wasn't flawless or untouchable now, and the sheer embodied realness of him, the marks of age, the sheen of sweat on his skin, made him even more beautiful. Cleofer let himself look at all of him, the way he'd wanted to even when he hadn't known it was what he wanted. Fitzroy looked back at him, and although it was hard to be sure with his coloring, Cleofer thought he might have been blushing. "Come here," Cleofer said, which was the easiest and bravest thing he'd ever done. Fitzroy came the rest of the way across the room, and Cleofer stood to meet him.
"It's been a long time,"
Fitzroy said into the space between them. Cleofer put his arms around him.
"Which is really just an extraordinary understatement,"
he added, voice shaking. "For me, too," Cleofer said. "Not like it's been for you, but..."
"I know."
Fitzroy put his hand on Cleofer's chest, fingers sliding over the silk of his outer robe.
"You're very discreet, but..."
"Yes, thank you." Cleofer rolled his eyes. "How jealous were you, exactly?"
"Appallingly jealous,"
Fitzroy said, and kissed him, fisting his hands in Cleofer's robes. Cleofer stroked his palms down Fitzroy's back, already overwhelmed by all his naked skin. Fitzroy tugged at Cleofer's robes, but the two of them were too entangled for clothing to come off easily, and all he managed was to pull the top layer of silk partially out of Cleofer's belt. He was laughing as he broke the kiss.
"Would you please take this off?"
Cleofer grinned and gently pushed Fitzroy away so he could untie his belt. "I thought you liked this outfit."
"I do like that outfit."
Fitzroy reluctantly released his hold on Cleofer's robes. Cleofer turned to hang his belt over the back of a chair, and then he took off both layers of his robes and the tunic under them and draped them over the chair as well, in a heap of blue and white and gold.
"I have to admit,"
Fitzroy added, in a low voice that made Cleofer's skin prickle. When Cleofer turned back to him, his eyes were dark with pupil.
"I find it very satisfying to see you dressed well, not only because your status demands and deserves finery, but because it suits you."
Cleofer flushed. He should have felt colder, standing there in only his linen under trousers and his gilded sandals,
but his whole body was hot under Fitzroy's gaze.
"But as much as I like it,"
Fitzroy continued, reaching out to rest his palm, featherlight, on Cleofer's bare chest.
"I like this better. I think we'll have to find more opportunities for you to wear your full Islander finery, because I cannot even begin to tell you how good you looked yesterday. I thought I was going to lose my mind when I saw you in that outfit and couldn't touch you."
Cleofer wrapped his fingers around Fitzroy's wrist, pressing his hand more firmly against his skin. "You can touch me now." Fitzroy shut his eyes, breath catching, and then opened them again.
"Yes,"
he said.
"Gods, Kip."
He touched Cleofer's shoulder, tracing his fingertips over his collarbone and down his chest, briefly grazing a nipple and making Cleofer suck in a harsh breath.
"I really don't think you should ever wear shirts at all, hiding all this behind layers of silk. And I love the silks, you know I do. But the way you looked in the grass skirt, oh, you're a fella."
He stroked the pearls and the shells of the Afella Co, the only one Cleofer was wearing at the moment, and Cleofer shivered at the touch.
"I could write odes to your shoulders alone, not to mention epics to the rest of you, and quite possibly some very dirty sonnets. And Kip, my love, will you please stop me from babbling on and on like this before I die of embarrassment?"
Cleofer kissed him. Fitzroy held on, one hand still pressed against Cleofer's chest and the other curling around the back of his neck. "You have nothing to be embarrassed about," Cleofer said, smiling against his lips.
"I like you like this."
He pulled back far enough to see his face, familiar and beloved and as open as Cleofer had ever seen it.
"You really don't have a serene bone in your body, do you?"
Fitzroy laughed.
"Not a one, I'm afraid."
His fingers slid into Cleofer's hair.
"Especially not with you, my love. You discompose me completely."
There was that "my love" again. Cleofer's heart felt too big for his body. Full to the brim with joy and affection and longing and desire, all those things he'd felt all along, but never recognized for what they were. He put his hands around Fitzroy's waist and pulled him closer. He was all limbs, but his body fit against Cleofer's in a way he could never have imagined, even if he had dared to imagine the impossible. Skin against skin was a revelation, and pressed together from knee to chest, he could feel the hardening line of Fitzroy's cock with only the thin linen of Cleofer's trousers separating them. He was half hard himself, arousal burning through him from every place they touched.
"Fitzroy,"
Cleofer said, and in his arms Fitzroy gave a shuddering jerk.
"Oh,"
he moaned, burying his face in Cleofer's shoulder.
"Oh, gods, I..."
Cleofer held on to him as tightly as he could.
"I had no idea how it would feel to hear you say my name,"
he said shakily.
I thought I was doing so well, because it feels so easy to touch you, so natural, even after centuries without, but I didn't account for you saying my name."
"Fitzroy," Cleofer murmured again, like a caress. Were there any other words in the world? He could feel the rapid beat of his pulse, his cock getting harder where it was pressed against Fitzroy's thigh. He kissed his ear, the curve of his shaved head, touched his waist and his shoulders and his hips, and slid his hands, daringly, lower. Fitzroy was shaking, his hips making little desperate thrusts and his breathing coming out harsh and uneven. Cleofer pushed his thigh between his legs and pulled him up against him, as close as he could get. He still wanted to be closer.
"Kip,"
Fitzroy gasped.
"If you don't stop, I'm going to..."
"Good," Cleofer said fiercely, tightening his hands. "Come on, then, Fitzroy." Fitzroy made a broken, breathless noise that Cleofer wanted to hear every day for the rest of his life and shuddered against him, wetness spreading between them as he came. Cleofer was shaking, too. His own desire felt as wide and devouring as the ocean, as the feeling of his lord coming apart in his arms. He held Fitzroy as he came down, stroking his back in gentle circles. Fitzroy kept his face pressed against Cleofer's shoulder until the shaking slowed, and then he raised his head. His eyes were wet, and his smile was one of the most beautiful things Cleofer had ever seen.
Cleofer kissed him, tasting salt, until both of them were smiling too widely to continue. His own eyes were damp when they parted, and Fitzroy stroked his thumbs under them, wiping his tears away.
"Oh, Kip,"
Fitzroy said softly.
"I love you."
"I love you too," Cleofer said. "Fitzroy, Tor, my lord, I love every part of you." Fitzroy's eyes were shining.
"No one else has ever known every part of me."
Cleofer kissed his cheek. "I hope that changes," he said. "I hope all the people who love you come to know you as I do. But I will always count myself lucky beyond measure." Fitzroy wrapped his arms around him, stroking his hands down Cleofer's sides and curling around his hips.
"Kip,"
he said.
"Can I, please?"
"Anything you want," Cleofer said. Fitzroy made a breathless noise, not quite a laugh.
"That might be a dangerous proposition."
"No," Cleofer said seriously, looking up into his eyes. "I don't think it is." Fitzroy looked back at him, intense in a way that would have once given Cleofer a pounding headache. Now, he was safe in the knowledge that there was nothing to fear from the magic and nothing he wanted to hide. They gazed at each other for a long time, until Fitzroy nodded and began to steer Cleofer back toward the bed. He pushed gently until Cleofer sat down on the edge of the plush mattress, and then he sank to his knees. Cleofer made an involuntary noise of protest. After 1,000 years, it was hard to hold back his instinctual distress at the sight of his radiancy kneeling.
"I may not be as young as I was the last time I did this," said Cleofer's lord of rising stars, "but I think my knees are up to the task."
His expression was fond, with only a hint of weariness around his eyes as he gracefully elided the real concern, dismissing it before Cleofer could even give it voice. Cleofer put out his hand, trembling, and Fitzroy took it and kissed his knuckles.
"All right," he said, his voice rough.
He was clinging to Fitzroy's hand.
"Just give me a moment." "Of course,"
Fitzroy murmured, and then he bent to take Cleofer's sandals off his feet, which was not giving him a moment at all. Cleofer laughed shakily, overwhelmed and helpless in the face of him, because Fitzroy was a menace, and Cleofer should have known. Maybe he had known, somewhere deep down, from that first shared joke. Fitzroy grinned like the reprehensible rogue he was and went for the fastenings of Cleofer's trousers. Cleofer lifted his hips into his hands, helping him pull the trousers off. His cock sprang free, hard and flushed and glistening. Cleofer hadn't even realized how wet he was getting. He shuddered when Fitzroy cursed under his breath and slid his long-fingered hands up his thighs.
"Ready?"
Fitzroy asked. "No," Cleofer said honestly. "But please?" Fitzroy kissed his thighs first, in a way that Cleofer could only think of as reverent, lingering until Cleofer was making so much noise that he was desperately grateful for the wall of silence. He had one hand around the back of Fitzroy's neck, the other gripping hard at his shoulder, and Fitzroy darted a burning look up at him before he moved his mouth to Cleofer's cock. Fitzroy's mouth was almost unbearably hot, kissing the shaft and then sliding down over the head of Cleofer's cock to suck him. It was messy, uncoordinated, Fitzroy's hand around the base a little too gentle, but it didn't matter. There was nothing in the universe but this.
"Fitzroy, please,"
Cleofer groaned, not even sure what he was saying. It wasn't going to last.
"I won't."
Fitzroy's hand tightened, and his mouth slid a little lower, and that was it.
"My lord,"
Cleofer cried, and came. When he could breathe and see and think again, Cleofer found Fitzroy still on his knees, his cheek pillowed on Cleofer's thigh. His lips were flushed and swollen, and the sight of them made an aftershock shudder through him. "That still can't be good for your knees," Cleofer croaked, and when Fitzroy only made an unconcerned humming sound, Cleofer tugged him up onto the bed on top of him. They were both sticky and sweaty and loose-limbed. Fitzroy wrapped himself around Cleofer, tasting like sex when they kissed. Tasting like him, Clayfer realized, looking into his mouth.
Did you know?
Fitzroy said, breaking the kiss to rest his head on Clayfer's chest.
That you called me my lord when you came.
Clayfer snorted. He was too content to blush. Well, I've only known your name for an hour or so. You've been the love of my life for much longer than that, and my lord for even longer. Fitzroy made a soft noise of pleasure and rolled over so his chin was propped in Clayfer's chest.
I'm ready to stop being everyone else's lord,
he said,
but I don't entirely mind being yours.
Clayfer ran his hand down his back, stretching so he could feel as much of Fitzroy's smooth skin as possible, his soft cock nestled against his thigh. He was hairless all over, and Clayfer wondered whether he would grow his hair back once he no longer had to follow the fashions of emperors. At least one story described Fitzroy Angersaw with a cloud of black hair rising up around his head in defiance of gravity. My lord, Clayfer said, taking Fitzroy's hand. My love. My husband. He did blush, just a bit, saying it for the first time.
Yes,
Fitzroy breathed, squeezing Clayfer's hand.
You know,
he said slowly, after a while,
since you refused the parade in honor of the viceroyship, I really don't think you're going to like the traditional court requirements for the introduction of a new imperial consort.
Clayfer tackled him back into the bed and kissed him until he stopped laughing. They both fall asleep after the second round. They had kissed and touched for what felt like hours, slow and exploratory and sweet and awkward in turns, until it had tipped suddenly into desperation and they had come all over each other, and Clayfer woke to a room darkened by evening and a quiet knock on the door. Fitzroy had released the wall of silence before they had fallen asleep, which was just as well since he was now wrapped around Clayfer like an octopus and snoring softly against his throat. Snoring! Clayfer loved him. Clayfer tugged the coverlet a little higher and called quietly. Come in. It was Khonju, which Clayfer had more or less expected. He shut the door behind himself and smiled, taking in the rumpled bed and, Clayfer was certain, the fact that both of them were still naked. I'm so glad, Khonju said, keeping his voice low. We all thought, maybe, once the taboos were lifted, but we didn't know if there would still be too many things keeping you apart. His smile turned a little sad, and Clayfer remembered Tarek. Surely, he thought, he and Fitzroy could find a way to track down Khonju's lost love.
Khonju?
Fitzroy said sleepily into Clayfer's shoulder.
Is that you?
He pushed himself up on his elbows, blinking awake.
Roden did imply that you would skewer us for the unexpected wedding.
Khonju sniffed. That's as it may be, he said. But one wedding in the Vengaveve, I'm sorry, Clayfer. He added, sounding genuinely apologetic, but you know it is regarded as a backwater province, will hardly be enough to satisfy all the people of Zenid. There will have to be several weddings. Khonju took in the expressions on their faces. Clayfer could imagine the horror on his own, and even Fitzroy looked apprehensive, and his mouth quirked. Don't worry, my lord. Most of them won't be possible until after you've found the new lord or lady, so there'll be plenty of time to plan.
Ah, said Fitzroy, amusement in his eyes. That's a relief.
Although we should talk about the jewelry, Khonju said, frowning. Not all of the pieces in the consort's regalia will suit Clayfer, and perhaps something new...
Khonju,
Fitzroy said, in one of his Radiancy's firmer tones.
Did you really come in here to talk about jewelry? Surely that can wait until we're back in Solara.
Khonju straightened. No, my lord, of course not. I came to ask if you wanted something to eat. He raised his eyebrows. And perhaps a bath? And to ask whether we should inform Kip's household that he'll be remaining here tonight. Clayfer and Fitzroy looked at each other, and then Clayfer's stomach growled, and Fitzroy started to laugh.
Yes,
he said.
And yes, and yes. Thank you, Khonju.
Kanju bowed. "Of course, my lords," he said demurely, but he smiled at both of them before he laughed, warm and real.
"Weddings?" Cleaver said faintly, after the door was closed again.
Fitzroy shook his head, still grinning.
"It can't possibly be as bad as the Regency ceremonies, and, well, we are already married. At least we'll know it's a wedding the next 14 times."
"This is not what I expected when you decided to make me your Lord Chancellor," Cleaver said, but he was looking down at their hands, still clasped together on top of the coverlet, his own sturdy light brown fingers entwined with Fitzroy's darker ones. Fitzroy's hand in his was already as necessary as breathing.
"No,"
Fitzroy said, leaning in to kiss him.
"It's better."
Epilogue. They were an hour out from Nijan when Captain Diogen knocked urgently on the cabin door. Ludwig admitted him, and Cleaver looked up from his novel, only to start in surprise when he saw the round black-and-white bird perched decorously on the captain's forearm.
"We've had a message for you, my lord,"
Captain Diogen said, extending his arm so Cleaver could see the scroll tied to the bird's leg.
"It spelled something fierce. My ship's wizard said no one should touch it but you."
"Ah," said Cleaver, resolutely not looking at Ludwig.
"Thank you, Captain." He stood, and the bird hopped from Captain Diogen's arm to Cleofer's, looking up at him with disturbingly intelligent black button eyes. Cleofer carefully untied the scroll from the bird's leg. He could feel the magic, sparkling against his fingertips as it recognized him and settled. He would never be a wizard, but he knew what Fitzroy's magic felt like.
"Thank you," he said gravely to the bird. It pecked lightly at his knuckles and then launched itself back out the cabin door in a flutter of feathers. They all stared after as it flew away over the water, and then Captain Diogen gave a bemused shrug, bowed to Cleaver, and went out again.
"I believe that species of bird is native to Alinor,"
Ludwig said meditatively.
Cleaver made a face. He would think, after all the time and effort I spent reforming the postal service, that he could at least send letters through it like a normal person.
"When has he ever done anything like a normal person?"
Ludwig sounded like he was suppressing a smile.
"You know he's probably worried about security."
"How secure are magic birds?" Cleaver wondered aloud, but he knew Ludwig could see right through him to the warm, aching glow of pleasure he felt from having Fitzroy's letter in his hand. He sat down again, glancing up at Ludwig as he did so, and caught the hint of a grin.
"Ludwig..."
Cleaver started, but Ludwig shook his head.
"Do you want me to leave you alone? We're safe enough. I could go out on deck."
"No, it's all right," Cleaver said, because Ludwig's presence was always a comfort. "There might be a note for you."
"His letters to me come through the post,"
Ludwig said dryly, but he sat down again with the notebook and pen he'd borrowed from one of the sailors. He was working on a poem. The sequel, Cleaver thought, to the one his Radiancy had written out for him. Cleaver broke the seal and unrolled the pages, spreading the letter out on his knees. Fitzroy's hand was as familiar as his own, and infinitely more precious.
"My dearest Kip,"
the letter began,
"I'm sure you're already admonishing me for not sending this through conventional means. And truly, my love, the Postal Service is a wonder. But I wanted to be certain it would reach you unharmed and with all due haste. You see, I've enclosed a new poem by the notorious Fitzroy Angersell. Although the recent pardoning of the Red Company has made it much easier to circulate that infamous poet's works within the former Astendalan Empire, this one is intended for your eyes alone. I believe I promised you dirty sonnets."
Cleaver flushed, flipping through the pages until he found it. One sheet of 14 lines, written, recognizably, in the exact same handwriting as the rest of the letter. Cleaver's breathing was a little unsteady as he looked down at the poem, held in his hands like a delicate flower, or a bomb about to go off. It was an original poem by Fitzroy Angersell, the greatest poet Astendalas had ever produced. It was the first original poem by Fitzroy Angersell in more than 1,000 years, by some reckonings, and Cleaver couldn't show it to anyone.
He was going to kill Fitzroy right after he kissed him. The letter continued.
This is only a first offering, and I am somewhat out of practice. I think Julinar despairs of me. She says she has never heard anyone sound as besotted as I do when I speak of my husband, which I apparently do incessantly. Maseo's phrasing. Pally, on the other hand, remembers you with fondness and sends her regards. My friends are anxious to meet you, as I am anxious for you to meet them, once we have reconvened our full company.
It was astonishing, Cleofer thought, that all of the impossible things in his life, his boyhood dream of one day adventuring with the Red Company, now seemed almost a certainty. He couldn't help laughing, which made Ludwig glance up for a moment before returning to his composition, and he read the rest of the letter, which described a series of improbable adventures that could have come directly out of legend, with fond delight.
My extensive knowledge of obscure matrimonial customs,
Fitzroy concluded,
which I began studying again in depth after a fortuitous accident to the Vangaveva, have come in handy more than once already. I am now prepared, should the need arise, to marry you in every part of the Nine Worlds, though I hope, for the sake of our eventual retirement, that we can limit ourselves, mostly, to Zunid. I miss you desperately, and I am, as always, entirely yours.
He had signed with the sun and glory. Cleofer traced his thumb over the impression, lingering, and then he carefully folded the letter and tucked it away in the pocket of his inner robes. The pocket was over his heart, and there was a little magic in the stitching to keep Fitzroy's letters safe without ruining the lines of his costumes. It was related, Fitzroy had explained, to his famous bag of unusual capacity, although Cleofer was reliably certain he had not shared that part with Lady Elette. With each letter, and there had been several, although this was the first to contain a poem, Fitzroy and his radiancy blended more and more in Cleofer's mind, legend and song and story overlaid on years of steadily growing intimacy. In one sense, Cleofer knew Fitzroy better than anyone. In another, he was still discovering who he was, uncovering him one surprising, fascinating, glorious layer at a time, the greatest gift of his life. He was a little misty-eyed as he put the letter away. He saved the sonnet to read when he was alone.
You must miss him,
Vignet said to him later at Enya's party.
His radiancy, I mean, and I'm never going to get used to that.
She laughed, taking a drink of one of the passing waiters.
If I said the traditional toast before drinking this, it's your husband I'd be asking for his blessing, Kip.
Cleofer snorted. Please don't. He hates that. He's really not a god, you know.
Well, I'm sure you know,
Bertie said doubtfully, but he laughed when Cleofer glared at him. Sorry. But Vinny is right. The proclamations haven't stopped coming since the last time you were home, and sometimes it's hard to remember that the illustrious Lord Madong is our Kip. I'm glad you know now, at least, Cleofer said ruefully. He wasn't resentful anymore, but that didn't mean it was easy to reconcile the different spheres of his life. He and Fitzroy had that in common. And yes, Vignet, he added, smiling at his sister, I do miss him. Of course I do. But he left me with plenty of work to do while he's away, and I've been busy. And so is he, if his letters are anything to go by. He touched his hand lightly to the pocket over his heart, a habitual gesture he hadn't quite been able to break.
Giano has told us some stories,
Vignet said, eyeing Cleofer over the rim of her cocktail.
Did the Prince of Amboloya really?
Oh, gods. Cleofer groaned.
Of course that got back to you.
Yes, he stood up in the Council of Princes and said it was about time His Radiancy made an honest man of me. I really don't know what came over him. He's supposed to be my greatest political opposition. Vignet and Bertie were both laughing, and even Ludwig, Cleofer's silent shadow, had cracked a smile.
He still is,
Ludwig said dryly.
He's just also a romantic.
I think I liked him better when he was calling me the Lord Emperor's lapdog, Cleofer said mournfully. But he has been remarkably willing to negotiate, and he's not the only one. I wish I could say it was the strength of my arguments, but... He waved his hand, and the light caught the sparkle from the rings he was wearing. The gold seal of the Lords of Zunid,
and the opals and flame pearls Conju had insisted on. Conju liked them better than most of what they'd found in the treasury, but they were still ridiculously ostentatious.
"Dear Lord," Finier said, and then clapped a hand over her mouth, eyes wide.
Cleaver started to laugh. It was, he reflected as the party spun on around him, probably for the best that his family would have some time to get used to things before Fitzroy returned. Perhaps by the time they retired, Vignier and Birdie and everyone else would be ready to see him not as his Radiancy, but only as Cleofer's slightly odd Velio husband, the son he'd brought home with him. It was a little strange to be back in Gorgo City for the first time since the Regency ceremonies. For the first time since his wedding, even if he hadn't known it was a wedding at the time. Cleofer caught a glimpse of Gianna moving between the knots of people, every inch the paramount chief, and grinned. It was thanks to Gianna for insisting on the right title. Thanks, little though Cleofer wanted to think it, to Princess Oriana for utterly failing in her duties. Thanks to Zemius, and an ancient custom, and a twist of fate, that Cleofer and Fitzroy didn't have to wait and wonder and guess. That, instead, they could do what needed to be done, knowing that they would return to one another. Marriage complicated many things, but there were some things it made simpler. He was still smiling when Gianna hopped up on the stage and saw him.
"This is a man who needs very little introduction,"
Gianna said, grinning at Cleofer.
"But for those few in this room who are neither related to him nor his close friends, let me do so. Around here he is generally known as one of the many in Badong's famous Cousin Kip, but in the rest of the world he is much better known as His Excellency Cleofer Lord Madong, the Viceroy of Zunid and the consort to the last Emperor of Astandalas. Lord Madong!"
"Thank you, Paramount Chief," Cleofer said gravely, meaning every word, and folded his hands to begin the ceremony. The end. Thanks for listening.